Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Le Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. I'm Stu Hardy, joined as always by Derek Brissett, and we will be having another special guest appear on later. But for now, Derek, how have you been?
Doing good, man. Doing good. Had a pretty fun weekend with Aussie Rules football team, Toronto Dingoes. We did a pretty big team social thing on a Saturday night, which was a really good time. Checked out a couple movies this weekend. So it was solid. Loved all the reaction to our interview with Louis Meyer. Seems like that's been great to hear what everyone's thoughts on that one was, and that was a lot of fun. So that was a good start to the week, and then got to watch some chaos in the Rugby World Cup warm-up games. It's always a good time. England losing to Fiji. Fiji's so fun to watch. The All Blacks forgot to show up for their game against South Africa, so that's also something. But it was a good time. What'd you get up to this week?
Yeah, I've been pretty busy with my house, doing like a few renovations, and anyone that's done any home renovations will know you put a bit of energy in somewhere, you realize it's not going to work, so you need to do another thing, and then time and energy and money and blah blah blah. But I did get a chance to watch South Africa win the acclaimed Qatar Airways Cup at Twickenham against the All Blacks. That's what it was. It was the weren't even watching the three Qatar Airways logos and sprayed all over the pitch. Come on, man, you gotta pay attention to these things.
I was too busy.
It's right there under the World Cup.
I was too busy.
Like, what everyone wants to win.
Jersey to wipe away tears. I couldn't really see properly. So
yeah. So anyway, we've been talking about rugby that will be happening in Europe and taking place in France, but let's bring it back to Toronto specifically, because the Toronto Arrows, if you go over to their social media page on Instagram, have this new reel out, so a video, and it has the Arrows logo. It's flying above the clouds. It just says "from above," and then the date of September 5th, 2023. So,
yeah,
what is that all about?
I have no idea. At the very least, at the time of this recording, I have no idea. It's interesting because, okay, so like, if we look at like the Arrows off season, mm-hmm. my guesses are it's possibly a coach's announcement, because the team doesn't have a coach.
Yeah, okay.
So there's got to be an announcement on who the new coach is, has to come soon at some point. Right. It could potentially be the first wave of player re-signings. Maybe the first wave. This is about the time where the Arrows typically kind of do that.
That's another reasonable.
My only other theory is because the only thing that is in this video, really, it's, as you said, it's above the clouds. There's a bit of music. There's an Arrows logo. And then there's like three stripes that mm-hmm. come across the bottom of it. And the three stripes aren't Arrows colors, or at least not what we would traditionally think of as Arrows colors.
Light blue, gray, and red,
which is like, I don't know, maybe a little branding change, maybe mixing it up a little bit there. I don't know. I feel like it could literally be anything. It's a very vague announcement, but it's kind of exciting nonetheless. I like having some off-season stuff.
Well, I think the good thing for us is that September 5th is a Tuesday. So by the time this episode comes out, it wouldn't have been revealed what it is. So we're still ahead of what it is.
The teaser got revealed early enough for us to talk about it. I don't know. Yeah. It is interesting. Like, I mean, I don't know. Those are kind of like the only three things I can really think of. It's like some sort of personnel announcement or some sort of branding or marketing related thing.
Yeah, I was going to say it may have something to do with like the Toronto Air Show, because that takes place over the Labor Day weekend. But again, this is the day afterwards.
Yeah.
So I'm not 100%. It's kind of confusing, a kind of, you know, I'm intrigued, but it's not a clear thing. It's not like a silhouette of someone and being like, guess who it is? So yeah definitely one I'd say everyone should be keeping their eyes out on social media, especially September 5th.
Is interesting though, because it seems like, I'm just kind of looking at the Arrow's Insta account now, there's a lot of like black and white on the Arrow's social media lately. The two posts of the draft, when they announced Louis Mia and Monty Weatherall as draft picks, are both black and white. Something that we'll get to in a moment, but the Mike Shepard retirement announcement is a black and white image. There's a quote that Shepard has that's also a black and white image. There's a picture of just like a hooker with his hands on the ball. That's a black and white image. And then there's this announcement, which is mostly black and white too. It's those three colored stripes. So that's which we just kind of talked about. So just a bit of I don't know. Maybe there's a little bit of a slow, maybe it's like a marketing thing. Maybe it's a little bit of a slow shift as to what, I don't know. Obviously,
a grayscale kit doesn't really appeal to me, but I'm sure we'll find out for certain September 5th.
That's the kind of the fun thing about the announcement, is it's almost perfect in the sense that it's enough to get you excited, but also vague enough that you have no idea what it is.
Exactly.
Which is ultimately the perfect teaser thing, really.
All right. Okay, we've put it off. We did mention it. That's time to talk about it. More upsetting than being an All Black fan and seeing them lose the Qatar Airways Cup. More historic than Tier 2 Nation finally getting a win over England is the announcement that Mike Shepard, original Arrow number 5, has officially announced his retirement from professional rugby following his decade-long career as playing for both Canada, Ontario Blue, and also a Toronto Arrow. Shep, has a incredible stat count to his career for the Arrows. He leads the franchise in appearances at 59, has the most carries and the most dominant tackles, and his 10 tries scored are the most among any forward in club history. And, as you said, original Arrow, he's been there from the start. He was even there during the Ontario Arrows campaign of 2018. He's built a repertoire over the past few seasons of getting that charge down sorted, collecting the ball and scoring a try, known as the Mike Shepard special.
That's got to be like, what, 4 of the 10 tries at least?
Yeah, absolutely. The one they've highlighted on the Arrows website was the one against LA, the first try scored on Canadian soil since the season finale of 2019. And, he's also done the same thing against New York back in 2021. I think he also did against Atlanta as well. Yeah, he's definitely got a few memorable ones for the highlight reel. Absolutely. But, we've also had Shep on the podcast as well, and he was, just a great talk, very, very well spoken. Great representative for both Canadian rugby and the Arrows. And he does say in his own post on Instagram, I will carry my passion of the game through coaching, and hopefully I can inspire the same love and dedication that this game has given me into the younger generation. So that is, great to hear that he's going to still be involved in rugby somehow, and obviously coaching, very noble thing to do. It's sad that he's that we won't be seeing him on the field again in Arrow's colours, but he's captained the team. He's been a mainstay for so long. and now transitioning into coaching the next generation of players. So
yeah,
for everything, thank you, Shep. We'll be looking forward to seeing you in the crowd and enjoying the one of those Arrows games in the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a hell of a shift from Mike Shepard. And, you know, you're talking about him being like the original, like one of the original Arrows. Like he was, it was literally him and Lucas Rumball were the two guys that were like in like the press release photo shoot when the team got announced. Right. So it's like he's been there, you know, even as you say, going back to the Ontario Blues days, he's been there since prior to day one. Obviously, you know, he's like, I mean, from our point of view too, whenever we asked him to do an interview or anything, he was always, you know, more than gracious with his time and usually came through with a pretty funny quote. I love the episode that we actually got to do with him. There's some great one-liners from Shep in that one. And go check that out if you haven't done it as well. He's obviously a brilliant player, you know, the history, you know, through, you know, even like through just playing for, you know, in Ontario and even before the Arrows and then obviously into the Arrows. But like, you know, he just kind of always felt like, you know, like you said, it's whether it's the charge down tries, the tackles, you know, the work rate, his and, you know, everything, just the way that he played, the hard nose style that he played the game with. And his, like, you know, his personality and everything off the field just always kind of seemed like one of those guys that's just like the soul of the team. And, you know, it'll be a little weird watching an Arrows game when Mike Shepard's not suited up, even if it is as a water boy or whatever it's going to be, which he did do a couple times, and probably the most intimidating looking water boy in the league. But it's, you know, it's, I think, you know, he's definitely, you know, he became a fan favorite player really quickly. And like, I think I'm excited that he's, you know, sticking around the game and coaching. And, you know, like you said, hopefully we still see him at Arrows games. Cause you know, it's kind of funny. It's like the league is still super new. So it's like, and you can't exactly retire numbers in rugby cause everybody kind of has that. But like, you know, as the league kind of grows and gets older, you know, I'm sure teams will start like maybe more formally honoring players and stuff. And I feel like at least because that's a thing that we really do in North America anyways.
Yeah.
Once teams start doing that, I mean, I'm sure like Shepard will be on the short list of like the first couple, you know, the first guys that the Arrows would do if, you know, they decide to, you know, do any like Ring of Honor type stuff that's really common to see in North American sports. I mean, he would probably be like one of the first guys on that list and, you know, fully deserved. And, you know, unreal 2019 season. I believe he was on the all MLR teams at the end of the year, turned it into, you know, his playing at the World Cup as well. And, you know, it's just, it was a unbelievable career and all the best in retirement, Shep.
All right. We said we had a special guest and they are coming up right now. And we are back with our special guest this evening. He is another of the draftees for the Toronto Arrows from the 2023 MLR Collegiate Draft. Ladies and gentlemen, Monty Weatherall. Monty, thank you for joining us this evening.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
All right. So as with all our interviews, we always want to hear about how your journey began. So what got you started in rugby to begin with?
Yeah, so I started playing rugby when I was six, growing up in the UK. So the classic, like, taken down to your local rugby club when you're super young on a Sunday morning. And so I played with my club there. And then I've also played in my junior school and then going into high school.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously starting rugby there at a pretty young age, obviously growing up in the UK, it's one of the rugby hotbeds in the world. So you got maybe a little bit of a head start on a lot of players over here, but is there anybody that was kind of like influential to getting you started in rugby or helping you, like, you know, kind of grow through, like, you know, the various clubs that you played for and then maybe even ultimately onto McGill University as well?
Yeah, I think, well, rugby's, it's always been in my family. So my grandfather played all the way back in the 60s. He was a Bedford Blue, which were at the time like a premier team club there. So he definitely was like a massive influence, and would always like take the time to come down to the games, give me the pointers after, on how he, mainly how he thought I could improve. Yeah, so definitely like my family have always been super supportive and kind of introduced me to the game. Had some great coaches as well, especially in high school, who really kind of focused me in on rugby. I always played quite a few sports, played a lot of football, like soccer, and was very into my cricket as well. But kind of got to age 15, 16, and the time commitments to take a sport to kind of the next level, things start clashing. And I had a few coaches at my high school who kind of sat me down and said, if you want to take this rugby thing seriously, like, we really think it's something that you should really consider.
What position did your grandfather play?
He was a winger. He's a winger. He always has this like adage that there's no substitute for pace. So he was a winger or a fullback. So I think he was quite disappointed at my lack of pace, because I think that gene wasn't necessarily passed down, but. He was a back three player mainly.
So obviously growing up in England and in the UK, rich history of rugby. Is there anyone that anytime they stepped out onto the pitch, you love to watch them play?
Yeah, I think growing up, my grandparents kind of getting me into the game, they lived in Bath. Growing up, we would go and watch Bath a lot, and George Ford was the 10 there. Like, obviously, he's not there anymore, but sort of between the ages of 12 and 16, he was running the show down at Bath. So I always used to love going down to those games and watching him, especially like just watching his pregame routine and the warm up. He'd be out there first with Matt Banahan, who was one of the wingers. They'd be kicking to each other. And Bath's like such a great place to watch rugby because you get right down on it's a tiny stadium. So you get right down on the side of the field. You're literally five yards away from them warming up. So that was, yeah, I always used to really enjoy watching him when I was growing up. And then obviously like you kind of watch the clips of Dan Carter and those other 10s from the Southern Hemisphere, who play the game with a certain amount of flair, which is like really admirable. So yeah, definitely those kind of characters as well.
Anyone who's ever wanting to do like go to a rugby game in the UK, I definitely recommend going to see Bath at the Rec, because it's a community ground and it's a wonderful stadium up close by the river. Yeah, I fully agree with you there, Monty. It's a unique experience to say the least.
No, it's a great place to watch rugby, definitely.
You obviously named a lot of tens when you were kind of listing off the players that you looked up to. There it is. Were you always a fly half? Did you try out any other positions, or did you always kind of just gravitate towards that that 10 spot? Did you ever try being a winger like the grandfather? Or did you, you couldn't fill out the shoes there?
Yeah. So I guess starting off, I would always play. I started off playing fullback. Did play some time on the wing as well. But yeah, like in junior school, there was a guy who was much better than me. So he would always play 10, but we ended up going to different schools. So kind of age 12, I started to play more 10. And yeah, just haven't really looked back. The best kind of standard of rugby I've played up until now, I was playing at 12 actually. Because that was the Wasps, and there was a particularly strong fly half there, and the kind of style of play that we played was very much having kind of two ball players in the midfield. I wasn't the big crash ball 12 at all. Definitely kind of having two playmakers in the midfield was kind of the style there. So did play a lot of 12, but yeah, since being out in Canada, yeah, it's been pretty much all fly half.
All right, so let's focus in on your early career in the UK, because Saying the first clubs you play for were Amersham and Chilton RFC. What was it like to play and grow with those clubs?
Yeah, Amersham Chilton is like, it's your quintessential like rugby club in the UK. Like everyone's down on a Sunday morning in juniors. And then as you kind of grow and get through the age groups, like you got, there's more opportunity to do like the Amersham and Chilton Academy, getting down on like a Tuesday, Wednesday night after school as well, getting that like extra coaching and extra training. So I played for them all growing up. So I went from literally under sixes all the way up to the Colts. And then in my last year of high school, I took a step up to play senior rugby. So I was playing kind of adult rugby as a 17, 18 year old, which was like, it was a big learning curve on the field, also off the field, kind of seeing a rugby club in that kind of environment as well. But that was that last year playing high school and having to take that step up to play adult rugby was an awesome year. Just the coaching I received there was absolutely outstanding. And there was a particular coaches that really, I think, saw that I was the youngest on the team, but were there to kind of put their arm around me and really mentor me, which I was very fortunate for. And yeah, the club itself is just like the heart of the community. Like they gave me my first job washing dishes in the kitchen on a Friday night after the functions. And like my entire family went through. I've got three younger brothers who all played age group rugby for them as well. All my friends from school played there. It was really like the center of the community for me. I lived like 5 minutes down the road, so any spare moment was down there with a bag of balls, doing some kicking practice, all that stuff. Yeah.
And then, as you mentioned, you also had the opportunity to gain experience with the London Wasps Academy. Now, for some of our Canadian viewers, they know that the Wasps went under this year, but they were also based in Coventry at the time. So, you were in the academy in the London Academy, which is where the Wasps' like home, like spiritual home, and where they were for over a century before moving up to the East Midlands. And so, what did the London Wasps Academy involve?
So I started there when I was 15. So I was picked up by one of their coaches who came to watch one of my games at high school. This is when they were still based in Acton in North London, which was like 40 minutes from where I lived. So I was within their kind of catchment. I got invited down there first when I was 15. It was kind of two nights a week after school, getting in a car with a bunch of lads from the area. Like our parents would always do the rotation on like giving lifts and everything. So I did that for 2 years down when it was in Acton. And then when I was in year 12 in school, they moved up to Coventry. So I did that for a year as well, but got for the geography of the UK, like Coventry's, it went from being kind of 40 minutes on a Monday and Thursday night to like 2 hours. So it was quite difficult. So did that for a year going up to Broad Street Rugby Club, which was really good. But then in that kind of last year of high school, it was like, you've got to do your exams and everything. So the commitment got a little bit too much and had some interesting exam results in grade 12. So I think the mood was around the Wetherill household that something kind of had to give. But you know, it was that first year in Coventry, like the coaching team they had there was awesome. I was very lucky. I got to work with Andrea Massi, who was the backs coach. He's got like 90 caps for Italy, and he was just like such a wealth of knowledge. And they would always get kind of a few guys from the first team to come out on a Monday night and run drills with us. So yeah, it was a really awesome year. And then when I kind of stopped doing that, that's the point at which I moved into playing senior rugby with my club. So I didn't miss out too much on that training. I was still able to kind of keep training and keep playing at a high standard. Like this, my club first team were in like level six. So kind of that tier just below semi-pro. So it was the skill level was probably slightly lower than at the academy, but then you're playing with adults and it just like brings that level of like experience and size that was still really, really good to learn off.
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously that sounds like a really great experience. You did kind of mention the like some of your exam results there. They couldn't have been that bad because you ended up at McGill. So they can't, they really, like, I don't know what your standard is like, but they couldn't have been that bad.
Yeah, we pulled it. They pulled it out of the bag. There's a lot of studying done in that last year of high school. I think I kind of had some. The parents kind of sat me down and said, "Listen, like you gotta start working at some point here." So yeah, we figured it out in the nick of time. Yeah.
So with that, obviously, you know, you made the decision to come to Canada, attend McGill University, join the rugby club there. It's kind of similar to what we were talking about last week with Louis Meilleux, who came over from France. You guys ended up in the same different schools, but same province as well. What's the appeal of coming over to Canada to play university rugby? And also maybe a little bit more specifically, what was the appeal of McGill University to you?
The story of how I ended up at McGill is quite actually, it's a very random one. Like I had a friend who I played at high school with, and then also played with other WASPs with, who did the whole like recruitment for North America, went to like the Dartmouth camp, spoke to some schools, and he ended up at McGill. So he went out a year before me and literally reached out halfway through his first semester and said, like, I don't know what your plans are, but we'd really love a 10 over here. So I kind of ummed and ahed about it. And then I went out and visited him, for a week in that second semester, went to training with the guys, met the head coach there, Ian Bailey. And yeah, just at that point thought, you know, could be a really good adventure, applied on a bit of a whim. Like it was the only place I applied, outside of the UK. And once I got in, it was kind of like this too good an opportunity to turn down really. So, came out really excited to try a different environment never really looked back. It's, a very fortunate, super random, but, incredibly lucky because it's been an unbelievable experience being out here.
So deciding to not only study in a different country but also to move to Montreal in Quebec, a province in which the primary language is French, although we asked Louis about that and he said maybe not exactly the same French that he knows, but what was your experience of coming over and living and studying in Montreal?
Yeah, it's funny. I did some French classes while I was at McGill. And I would definitely say I'm still on the lower end of intermediate, even after living there for 4 years. I think as soon as I tried to speak to someone and they sniffed out the English accent, they immediately switched to English. So it was quite difficult to practice, but no, I loved living in Montreal. I loved my time at McGill. I played a summer of club rugby. It was all a bit broken up because at the end of my first year, COVID hit. So we had like a year off of the rugby when I was there for the summers. But that second summer, which I spent in Montreal, I played for the Montreal Irish, which was coached by the same coach as McGill. We played like it was this weird kind of rugby tens format, I think trying to limit contact between people and limit the spread. It was like 10 aside, one person in the tackle, like a bit of a strange different format. But I played for the Irish for that summer. We won the rugby tens championship and they've not done one since. So I think we can like say that we're the only rugby tens championship in Quebec history, which is like something quite nice to say.
Reigning, defending,
exactly,
undefeated.
Yeah, all of them. No, it's great. Like living in Montreal, obviously, just culturally super different to growing up in a smallish town in the UK. But as a kind of 18, 19, 20 year old, like a lot of fun, like great experiences.
And obviously part of that was obviously playing rugby for McGill University. So is there any, like, when you kind of like look back at your years at McGill, obviously you just said part of it was cut off due to COVID, but is there any memories that stick out to you on the pitch or even maybe like off the pitch, but just with the team?
Yeah, so definitely I think that 2023 season, so my last year will always stand out as a particularly special year. We came into it, we hadn't won a championship in I think 5 years. We couldn't overcome our neighbors down the road, Concordia. They just beat us in the final every single year I was there. And obviously, you know, we were fortunate enough to take it all the way, win a championship in front of a home crowd on a Friday night, which was just an unbelievable feeling. And then also go to nationals and have the run that we did. It was an amazing year. It was an accumulation of just so much hard work from the coaching staff, but also all the other lads on the team. It's such a player led environment there. Guys are given responsibility pretty much from their rookie season. They're given responsibility around the organization to make sure that, like, we're getting things right on the pitch, but also we're doing the things in the community that a university side should do. That last year was absolutely like amazing experience coming out to Vancouver for the national finals and getting the silver medal, losing out to a very strong UBC side, but we did amazingly to get that far.
Yeah, I was gonna say, maybe like, if you want to, are you able to add like anything to like what the experience was like at the national championship? Because that's still like a relatively new thing. That's obviously it's a great initiative because it's something that really needs to happen in Canadian rugby, but it's still, in reality, it's still relatively new. So I was like, what was your just the overall experience like as a player there? Obviously, you got to play a couple really important games on quick turnarounds during a lot of it. And obviously, you know, maybe just the trip out across the country with the team is a bit of part of that as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess personally, I had two experiences of playing in the national championships. So the first was in my first year, because it was hosted at Concordia. The top two sides from Quebec were given a spot. So I think we were seeded seventh, and we played Queens and lost out, and we ended up, I think we finished sixth overall in that tournament. And the difference between that year and then the year gone by, you know, it was in Montreal. We were all living like at home and would just commute out to Concordia for the games, versus like coming in as the fifth seed, like the only representation from Quebec, and then having like the privilege to be flown out to Vancouver for the week right before our exams, which added like another level to it, trying to keep like a level head on all of that stuff, but also enjoying the experience of, you know, being honestly treated like a professional, staying in a really nice hotel, playing the other top quality university sides in the country. It was a fantastic opportunity. And, you know, we made the most of it. We had a lot of fun while we were out there as well. We had some great tour rules and the whole kind of squad really bought into what we were there to do. And I think the fact that the results on the pitch went our way is also a lot down to our team culture and how we built all that together as a group. I just remember on the afternoon before the first game we had, our coach stood up on the whiteboard. He'd done this exercise where he'd written like all the teams he's ever played for, all the players he'd played with who kind of were no longer with him, his favorite rugby memories. He'd written his partner's name and said, "I wouldn't have met my partner if it wasn't for rugby." Just really put like the perspective of the sport that we play, like, and how lucky we were to have this opportunity to represent like the province of Quebec and represent the university at like the biggest stage in university rugby in the country. He got us all to do that as well. So we all spent time kind of really reflecting on what rugby had given us. And we went into that game super fired up, but also just super relaxed and super happy. And I don't think, you know, we didn't let the moment get the better of us. And yeah, it was a fantastic, fantastic experience.
But just to go back a bit, is that you said at the end of your first year, everything's going well, and then a global pandemic hits in your second year to really put the brakes on getting another year of rugby under your belt. Being a foreign student at the time, was there ever the thought of, oh, I should, maybe get on the flight and go back to the UK? Or had you made that commitment to be like, oh, this will be over in 30 days, it'll be fine?
Yeah, I think a bit of both. I think, I don't know, hindsight, didn't realize how long that whole the whole kind of pandemic situation was going to last for. But yeah, at the time, like everyone else, it was at the end of my first year, so I went home for a short amount of time, but came back to Montreal very early on in that summer, and kind of lived and worked and got ready for that next season. Unfortunately it was cancelled, but the group did a really good job. Like our leaders, our kind of club presidents, and a few of the senior players that year did an amazing job of keeping us together. We met kind of semi-virtually to just get to see each other and socialize in that kind of lockdown environment. We also did initiatives. So we did a big we did the RBC Race for the Kids. So everyone did a kind of 5, 10, 15K as a group. And then we raised money for that charity. We kind of threw ourselves into our Movember fundraising efforts as well. So we put a lot of effort into staying together as a group during those COVID times. And whilst like we weren't able to really see each other or play any rugby, the gyms were shut, so it was quite hard to keep in shape, and especially like rugby involves a lot of lifting weights, which there were just absolutely none of. But they made sure that we were all still out there running as if the season could be called on at any minute. So yeah, that year was definitely a challenge. Obviously, it was challenging for everybody. But we had the leaders in the group that kept us all together, and it was a real disappointment, I think, for a lot of guys that was their last season, and there was that feeling of, especially the season before, we just missed out on the provincial championships, and we'd had a taste of the nationals, and there was a real feeling that maybe this could be our year to go one better. And yeah, unfortunately, we lost out on it, but we managed to keep the group together really well.
Now, I also remember reading somewhere that you picked up an injury early in one of your seasons and was therefore out for the majority of it. And we've seen, unfortunately, that some players in MLR this season have had to call time on their career as a result of injuries progressing and stuff. So obviously, with regards to the mental aspect of it all, of you're picking up, something's gone wrong, and you're suddenly out and for the next season. How did you mentally get yourself through that? Because I know that can be a real burden for a lot of athletes.
Yeah, I guess for just some quick background, in that third season, second game of the season, had a bit of a knee-on-knee collision, playing against our rivals Concordia, and was out for tore some ligaments in my knee and was out for the rest of the season, and it was a huge disappointment, especially after like losing the season before to COVID, then coming back in really excited to get back at it, and then missing out on the rest of that season. But I do, in many ways, consider myself really lucky that it happened to me when I was in that university environment. I was looked after like incredibly well by the physios and the doctors at McGill. Like I got the operation on my knee like 3 weeks after the injury in the university hospital, which is like unheard of at any standard below kind of top professional sport to get quality medical treatment that quickly after. And then yeah, the university were amazing in supporting me in my rehab. It was pretty much an 11-month from the injury back to playing the first game. Definitely some challenging times that following winter, where it's bleak and dark out and cold and freezing outside, and you're kind of stumbling around on crutches. But yeah, I was just supported so incredibly well by my teammates and the medical staff at McGill that I was able to come back from that injury in the time that I did. And yeah, really give it a proper go for my last year.
As you concluded the last season, you made the decision to enter the MLR draft and declare eligible for that draft. And so what like kind of drew you to declaring your eligibility for the draft? And what, you know, obviously you are from the UK. So what's been appealing about, you know, joining Major League Rugby, and I guess now to an extent, the Toronto Arrows, and, you know, continuing your rugby career in North America?
Yeah, I think so. I actually declared the year before, as like last year as well. But kind of I declared and then actually had a proper think about it. It was like, I haven't played in 2 years because of COVID and this injury. Like the chances are very, very slim. So I withdrew and thought, you know, let's really give it a proper go this last season and see where things get. And, you know, if we have a good year, then it'd be a possibility. At that point, I'd kind of like come to terms with the fact that maybe the professional rugby dream might not be necessarily achievable, but you know, if I worked hard for a year, then it could be potentially possible. So yeah, as it happened, had, you know, was very lucky, had a good season with McGill, and then moved out to British Columbia in January to keep playing at that high level, joined up with the Merilomas, who are just awesome club, and was able to play super high quality rugby out here with that group and in the BC Premier League. And then, yeah, went pretty well with the Lomas. We made the final, lost out to UBC again in two finals in 1 year to the same team. It's a bit tough, but yeah, again, they outplayed us. They deserve it. So yeah, I think, and then was selected for the BC Bears, kind of had that opportunity to mix it with the best players in the country, and kind of thought, you know, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to enter the MLR, which in my opinion it's an incredibly exciting league to be a part of. Like I always joke with my parents when I was entering it, that it's like, if there's one thing like America does is like sporting events and sport, and like whilst it is in its kind of infancy, like the World Cup's coming to North America in 2031. I think it's like an incredibly exciting time to be a part of this league. And, you know, I had this opportunity to enter the draft. It's literally a once in a lifetime opportunity. It's never going to come back. Like may as well go for it and see what happens. Yeah, very, very fortunate to be in this position, but looking forward to hopefully making the absolute most of it.
Obviously, you know, so you declared for the draft and then obviously go through, like, what was kind of like the process like after declaring the draft for yourself? Did you talk to a lot of teams? Did you, you know, have to, you know, do a lot of like interviews or anything? What was kind of like that like the whole, everything leading up to the draft, I guess, is like, what was that experience like for you?
Yeah, I think the main thing I wanted to do is just like get some good film together, kind of get a representation of what I can do and what I've been able to do for the last few years. So that was kind of priority number one, was get some tape together. And then, yeah, it was honestly, it was just in some ways just quite a painful waiting game, really, just waiting for the day of the draft. I was fortunate to be kind of reached out to by a representative at the Arrows, who kind of explained a little bit, you know, what the environment would be like. But I still kind of recognized there was no guarantees in any way of getting selected. So yeah, it was just months of anticipation and waiting, really, was the main way I'd describe it. But certainly exciting, and I don't know, just looking at all the media around it as well, it's just a great thing to be a part of.
Yeah, you kind of you mentioned you know, kind of building like a highlight tape. I think Louis last week also mentioned like that being a significant part of the draft process. Is that Like, is that a bit of a challenge right now for, say, universities and collegiate level players to, kind of get like a concrete, like 3 to 5 minute highlight tape or whatever the MLR is asking for?
I would say building a highlight tape in itself is a challenge. I think the nature of Canada is like, it's a massive country. So whereas, maybe back home, if there was a scout at a professional club who was interested, they could get in their car and drive a couple of hours and come watch one of your games and see you in person. Like, that's just really not possible in so many ways over here. So yeah, definitely having good tape is really important. And also just like having tape in good quality sides. So, having, for me, it was getting tape together of playing in Halifax for the BC Bears, because that's like the highest possible quality. And then also showing off all the university stuff as well is like very important.
So on the draft day itself, I know Louis was saying that, bit of a lack of glamour for him because he was busy at work at the time. Were you watching it on the Rugby Network and just like crossing your fingers, crossing your toes, crossing everything until you heard your name, or were you told in advance?
Well, I don't want to get myself in trouble here, but I was also at work. I was in the office and I was I had it on my laptop while I was at work. Yeah. So I didn't know going into it, how it would play out. I knew because I knew they'd invited the first 13 picks down to film it in person. So I knew I didn't go in the first round, which wasn't, necessarily a surprise. Like, I think with my eligibility, it was really going to be Toronto was like going to be my best shot, and they didn't have a first round draft pick. So I didn't get too spooked by that, but yeah, I was in the office watching it on the stream, and then I was actually, when it got announced, I was on the bus on the way home from work, and then I just like got home, packed my bag, and went to Merrill Omer's practice as it all kind of got together. So yeah, it was a pretty nerve-wracking couple of hours, but very, very fortunate. I had a positive ending.
What was
were any of the guys at the club watching as well? And did they congratulate you when you arrived and stuff?
Yeah, no, that was awesome. There was, well, someone put it in like the WhatsApp chat just before practice, which was really cool. So kind of got into practice and got a few congratulations from the guys, which was really, really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously you're now a Toronto Arrow. So like, what was kind of your reaction to the Arrow selecting you, and just kind of like, what's your kind of like level of excitement for joining, as you mentioned earlier, the only MLR team in Canada as well?
Yeah, obviously incredibly, incredibly excited. I think, there are 13 teams on there, but Toronto was the one I really had my eye on. It's a great city. I lived there for a summer when I was interning with TURF, the Toronto Inner City Rugby Foundation. So I kind of have an impression of what the city's like. And it's a great city. I'd been to a load of their games last year, and kind of the idea that next year I'll have the opportunity to compete for a spot to run out and play at the York Lions Stadium is incredibly, incredibly exciting. I was really over the moon to get drafted to Toronto, and so many friends in the city as well. So that's fantastic. And again, it's also that added bonus of I get to stay in Canada, which is fantastic.
Yeah, and obviously there's been, for the Arrows, there's been a little bit of a change at Fly Half this year with Shane O'Leary getting selected by Miami in the expansion draft. Sam Malcolm, Peter Nelson, two other guys that kind of rotate, can play both 10 and 15. What's your first impressions on walking into that group with, you know, obviously Malcolm, one of the top leading scorers in the MLR, and Peter Nelson's, the fly half for the Canadian national team on most days, and Robbie Povey also joined, who's also part of the Canadian national team too.
Yeah, no pressure.
Sorry, I didn't make that to sound overwhelming.
No, not at all. I think more than anything, it's just a great group of players to learn off of. I realize that the step up is going to be real, and it's going to be a lot of hard work to get myself up to speed, to get up to that level where I'm competing for a spot in the 23. And like there's a really good group of fly halves to kind of be mentored by and learn from. And I think that's what I'm really excited for, is to just kind of feed off that like wealth experience, which is already in the team. I think that side of it is really, really exciting. I had a message from a couple of the tens already there, kind of welcoming me and saying like, we can't wait to get started and get to work. So I do already feel like really welcome into the group, and can't wait to get to work with everyone in the squad.
Right, fantastic. Now, you did mention before that you have spent a summer in Toronto working for the Toronto Inner City Rugby Foundation. Can you describe that experience and what you learned as from an administrative perspective of rugby?
Well, Turf's an amazing organization. Like the people I met through that summer, kind of working alongside a load of other students my age who were there, also interning for the summer, but then also working for the two like directors of the organization, Amanda and Spencer. It's a fantastic organization, and it really it uses like the best things about rugby to really make a difference. I would absolutely loved the kind of 16 weeks I spent there. In terms of like what I was up to, there's a lot of coaching. They really focus on like neighborhood improvement areas. So communities that are underserved by existing resources, and just using sport, rugby to a certain extent, but also just play and like physical activity to go in and make a difference in the day of those like the youths we were working with. I'd say it's, in terms of administrative side of like rugby in general in Canada, I'd say it's much more, it's very, very grassroots and community focused, which I think is like coming from my own, having my experience growing up at that community club back in the UK, is something that's really, really valuable. It's like, it's where I made all my best friends and kind of got to like fall in love with sport and exercise. I think the fact that Turf's mission is to bring that to communities across Toronto is awesome.
Yeah. So does that give like a little bit of an added excitement to you that that Turf logo's I guess it was on the Arrows jersey last year, but potentially on the kit again, so you can kind of get your previous rugby experiences kind of shared on one kit?
Yeah, I think when it was announced last year, I was absolutely buzzing for them, because it's so cool to see them like up close and right in the center of that jersey. It was really awesome to see that. It's like it's the exposure which the organization deserves. Like they do so much for rugby in Ontario and in particular like in Toronto. The fact that they were the main jersey sponsors for the Arrows last year is awesome. And I think it also speaks a lot to the commitment of like the Arrows organization to grow rugby at the grassroots level across the province and also across Canada, that they were willing to give their main real estate on the shirt to a community development not-for-profit.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems like the reaction to it was really good. And on I hope it's something that the club continues into next year. And speaking of next year and maybe a little bit of the future as well, you obviously, as we touched on earlier, grew up in the UK. You moved to Canada, played for McGill. You've kind of, you're saying you're playing for Lomas now. You've worked at, you know, for Turf, grassroots rugby organization in Toronto. So you've lived, you know, kind of across Canada, it seems like already. And I'm sure a lot of Arrows fans are really curious to know what your Canadian eligibility stance is. Would you be able to explain that a little bit, or what your maybe your aspirations for the future are as well?
Yeah, of course. So I'm on that eligibility, the kind of residency pathway. So I'm four out of 5 years, pretty much to last week was when I moved to Montreal that first time. And then I've been here a sufficient amount of time for the last 4 years that this time next year, I'll be fully Canadian eligible, counting as a domestic player and then eligible also for Canada.
All right. That's great stuff. We love to hear more Canadian eligible players.
We need 10 side. Too. So this is very good news.
Yeah. Double bonus. It's all good from here. So, you playing with the Malomas, but you did mention as well that you represented the BC Bears in the Coast to Coast Cup, flying over to Halifax and playing against the Atlantic Selects and the Arrows Academy. So, you know, there's probably guys on both the BC Bears and your opposition that you may have known from your time playing for McGill. But what was that entire experience like? So playing, because Halifax are the hosts, and you were basically put into the rough spot of having to play two games within the space of, what was it, 4 or 5 days?
Yeah.
So how was that for like quick turnaround, especially when compared to flying out to BC and playing in the men's final for university level?
Yeah, I mean, it was an amazing experience to go out there with BC. Curry, the head coach, did a really good job of actually giving a bit of context into the rich rugby history that the BC Bears has. Like I didn't know prior to that tour or prior to playing for them that they've actually played test matches against the Lions and the All Blacks in the past. Like it's an organization, a team with like a lot of history, and the opportunity to fly out to Halifax and play in that tournament was awesome. It was again just like another kind of window into the life of a professional sports person, being full-time focused on the performance on the pitch. Obviously the results weren't what we wanted, but it was a fantastic kind of learning experience going out there and pitching up against the best players in the country.
Yeah, it's one of my like favorite random rugby facts is that BC beat the British and Irish Lions back in the day. It's a super, super fun thing to learn.
Yeah, it was. I mean, as I said, I had no idea kind of going into it that was the history which was in the jersey. Put a little bit of extra pressure on mind, but
yeah, for sure.
And the follow-up question, what was it like playing the first game in that thick fog?
Yeah, it was... Oh, I just felt awful for our fullback. Like, it started off, it was like... there was fog, but it wasn't, you know, too bad. But then just as the game went on, it went from, if the ball goes up in the air, it's going to be tough to catch, to... I genuinely can't see 10 foot in front of my face. Like if someone breaks the line right now, I'm going to be seeing them at the last minute. So yeah, it was some experience, a bit of a window into what summer in on the East Coast is like. but it was, I don't think I've ever played in, I've played in a lot of rain and a lot of mud, especially being from the UK, but yep. Yeah, never played in fog like that.
Okay. You've been drafted. You've got your summer rugby plan set up, but between now and the start of preseason for the 2024 MLR is about about three months and a bit of change. So what are your plans to basically get at the level that you need to be competing for the jersey and the Arrows?
Yeah, I think that definitely kind of twofold. So one part of it is, so I will definitely be playing over in BC with the Lomas this fall. We got the kind of the first half of our season, so definitely trying to contribute as much as possible to that effort. Like, as I mentioned earlier, we made it to the final of the Premier Division last year, and like the ambition is to take that one step further this year and go all the way and win it. So like, definitely one of my priorities is to contribute to that effort in the first part of the season, and hopefully, you know, get some good results that side. And then the other side of it is personally, very, very well aware that there's going to be a lot of strength and conditioning work to be done, like the step up to playing in the MLR, like the size and the power of some of the guys is definitely at that next level. So working with the strength and conditioning coaches at the Arrows and the ones here at Lomas to like build a bit of strength and size, but also really focus on like robustness, trying to make myself as prevent injury as much as possible, especially like ankles, knees, hips, that kind of area. So yeah, there's going to be a lot of hard work done between now and joining up for preseason, but yeah, like really looking forward to getting to it, like living that kind of professional athlete lifestyle is really, really exciting.
And considering the Arrows' last two seasons, injury prevention is definitely something to be having a focus and priority on. Absolutely. So, you know, with the Rugby World Cup coming up and getting prepared for the 2024 MLR season, is there anything you're hoping to see from MLR over the next few years, as well as the collegiate draft as well? Like any things that could be improved or that you have from like your own experiences that you're hoping to see?
Yeah, I think it's a tough question. I haven't really had a look into it too deeply thus far, you know, not necessarily the most qualified to answer, but I think if anything, just kind of following what's been going on back home with the Wasps and Worcester and Irish, like those clubs going under, I think it is important that when the league grows, it's growing sustainably. And you know, I think it's heading in as far as I can tell, you know, it's heading in the right direction. You got to put a really entertaining product on the pitch. Like, I think American sport is one of the reasons it's so successful. Like the NFL and the NBA is because it's just a show. Like, it's so entertaining, and I think that's the direction that rugby needs to go in, and the MLR needs to really champion is you know, we're not going to have a professional sports league that sustains itself if people aren't interested in coming down and watching and also tuning in on TV to watch. So yeah, I think the product has to be entertaining. It has to attract supporters. It has to attract fans in order to be kind of sustainable. So, but as I mentioned earlier, like the World Cup's coming to North America in 2031, like the US doesn't half-ass like sports events, like it really goes for it. So I think it's a super exciting time to be involved in rugby in North America.
Well, Monty, we want to thank you again for taking your time with us this evening to be interviewed. And again, congratulations on being drafted by the Toronto Arrows in the 2023 MLR draft. And we're definitely looking forward to seeing how you progress with them next season. Now, to any of our listeners and watchers, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to check out more, as well as our written pieces on our website, therougerugby.ca. We also have our podcasts on Spotify, S4P, and Apple Podcasts. We have a YouTube channel at Le Rouge Rugby with episodes of the podcast, as well as extra interviews with our Black Box. Make sure to like and subscribe and hit the bell notification to stay up to date with all our videos. We are also available across social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Threads, all at The Rouge Rugby. Derek, where can the fine people find you?
At Brissette the Jet across all social media.
Monty, do you have any social media accounts that you use at all?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can give me, drop me a follow on Instagram, MontyJames_. But yeah, other than that, not really.
Fair enough. And you can find me across social media at Hardman, spelled H4RDMAN. Well, Monty, again, thank you so much for joining us. We really enjoyed this interview. Derek, thanks for joining me. And thank you all to joining us for another episode of the Rouge Rugby Podcast, where we talk about real Canadian rugby. We hope you can join us again next time.